How have you not seen this? Welcome back to How Have You Not Seen This. As always, it's me, your host, Dustin Meadows. Today, I am joined by my friend, Nick Lesser.
Hi.
And we just finished watching Sylvester Stallone, wonderful movie, First Blood, commonly known as Rambo Part 1, incorrectly. Great movie, very different than the rest of the franchise. The entire cast in this, Stallone, Richard Crenna, who was Colonel Troutman, and Brian Dennehy, of course, all acclaimed for their acting, financially successful, kind of found critical success years after it came out. It wasn't looked upon too fondly, but now it kind of enjoys that cult status and that kind of retrospect looking back and people realizing what it really was. So very important movies as far as action genre is concerned, and also as far as commentary on war and soldiers and the like, which we'll get into later. So all that out there, Nick, how have you not seen this?
I blame it on Marilyn Manson.
Okay.
Actually.
Okay.
And the reason I say that is because I had the very same elementary school principal mm-hmm. that Brian Warner had.
Okay.
And he mentioned during my, I want to say first or second grade, he mentioned to my parents that that I reminded him of a student that he used to have, Brian Warner, mm-hmm. and that was right in the early '90s. You know, like Marilyn Manson had just begun to break. My family
yeah.
was fundamental Christian,
of course.
Everybody was sure that he was the Antichrist.
Yeah, yeah.
So as soon as they heard that, and I'm sure there was other reasons going on
yeah.
and everything, but that's just the palpable moment in my childhood that I really remember. Mattering is my parents would restrict what I could watch,
okay.
all the different things that I could watch. I wasn't allowed to watch Rugrats, so I wasn't allowed to watch Inspector Gadget, Scooby Doo, all these ridiculous things
it's
that I just
nuts.
I was very 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 protected in what I was able to watch. It was just Rambo fell into that category.
Okay.
It was released during the time when I was a kid.
Yeah,
never had a chance to watch it. It just wasn't an option to watch it when it was actually out and around.
Of course,
and I guess since then. I just never got around to it, really.
Okay.
There's always been, the newer movie come out, there's always been the bigger blockbuster.
Exactly. It's like, I can watch First Blood or, oh, hey, Avengers is out this week.
Exactly.
Okay, yeah, I definitely understand that. That may be the most interesting backstory I've had so far for a reason. Oh, I went to the same school Marilyn Manson did,
right?
And I unfortunately reminded the principal of a young Marilyn Manson. Except you didn't put out, like, four shitty albums after you tricked everyone into thinking you were socially relevant, so...
Give me time.
Cool. So now we know why you haven't seen it. What did you think of the movie?
I really enjoyed the movie. You linked the trailer...
Yes, let's talk about this. Yes.
You linked the trailer to my Facebook wall on my birthday.
Uh-huh.
And, you mentioned that I had a lot in common with John Rambo,
uh-huh.
and I don't believe I see what you were going for.
No, I honestly, I don't either. I remember I posted that either very late or very early, and I think I was just using it as an excuse to kind of wet your palate for tonight. Yeah,
it worked to that effect quite a bit because I did watch the trailer, and that was the first time that I realized that this movie does not take place in Vietnam.
Yeah.
I knew very little about the movie, but I did know that he was a Vietnam veteran, and I had seen, just clips here and there, and all the clips that you always show is, him in the foliage with the headband,
yeah.
looking like he's been in the middle of war for a
exactly.
while. And so I never really realized until I watched that trailer that it takes place in, near Seattle?
Yeah, it was in Washington.
Yeah.
The fictional town of Hope, Washington.
Hope, Washington.
Actually shot in Hope, British Columbia.
Okay.
So very, very near there, in that Pacific Northwest
right.
region. Also, it's funny you mentioned that too, not realizing it didn't take place in Vietnam, because the entire remainder of the franchise is built around him going to war in other countries, basically. Like, going on these black ops, like, one-man army-type missions.
Okay.
The movie itself is actually based on a book written by a guy named David Morrow.
All right.
And the movie is fairly close to it. The alternate ending that I showed you, where Rambo is killed by Colonel Troutman, that's actually how the book ends.
I kind of picked up on that. It seemed like they were
yeah.
building towards that.
And then Brian Dennehy's character, Sheriff Teasel, actually also dies from his wounds. Although, it's kind of left that he survived. It's implied at the end of this movie.
Right.
So the ending's tweaked a little. And I think part of it, too, Stallone had already done two or three Rockies at this point. Stallone was a banked actor,
yeah,
and
he
actually
star power. They were expecting the movie to do well, so it seems like they were intentionally leaving it open
for
the sequel
franchise. Yeah,
I guess the question that I had at that point is, was it worth it? Were the sequels actually good enough to justify?
Two is a fun movie. I don't think two and three are good movies necessarily. Like, I don't think any of them have as much to say as this one does.
Right.
Two is a very fun action movie. Three I remember being really indifferent on because it felt like a less charismatic version of two, essentially. I remember there's, like, Mujahideen involved. Like, it's in the Middle East. And I think he fights four terrorists, which, like, I remember being very weird. And then the most recent Rambo takes place, I want to say, in Burma. And it's just this unapologetically brutal action movie. But it's also really fucking good, unapologetic, brutal action. So, I think so. And I mean, I don't think they damage the impact of this movie. I don't think they damage the message at all that they exist. So, I mean, I'd say it's worth it. And also, like, I've never read the book. I've just read the synopsis. Like, I'm familiar. I know where it came from.
Right.
I can't imagine, like, reading the book and getting to that ending, like, without, like, having a movie, like, just to be like, oh, this guy that, like, I've kind of been pulling for the whole time has died. And he's painted as less, like, underdoggy in the book. Like, he's got some issues, like he clearly does here.
Right.
So he's not like Rocky as a Vietnam veteran, basically. But it's interesting, some of the choices they made. And I do think the theatrical ending for this works.
And I did like it. It definitely does work. And that does really speak to the acting of it as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
On one level, the monologue that he had at the end,
yeah,
where he was talking about his friend, on one level, it did kind of come across as Rocky playing a Vietnam vet.
Yeah.
It was a little bit...
but also, like,
sure.
You can't help but have a reaction to that,
absolutely.
Though.
And
like,
also
he sells it.
Yeah, he portrayed a broken man very convincing.
Yeah. And that's the thing, too. It never really dawned on me before, just now watching this with you. He doesn't talk a lot during the movie.
No.
He doesn't have, he never has more than two or three lines strung together up until the point at the sheriff's station where he has that monologue. And I think that just amplifies it. Like, he's clearly a man of action throughout the entire movie.
Right.
Like, he goes to ground. He's just trying to survive. Like, he's not a person. He probably could have talked his way out of the stuff early on with Brian Dennehy. Like, I'm sure he probably could have talked his way out of, like, you know, getting arrested and all that. But he didn't. Like, he's that kind of stoic, silent type.
The character was, you know, part of the point of the character was that he had been driven beyond his breaking point many times, so he just found a way to exist. Like that, he was no longer a human in a lot of ways. He was more like a cornered animal.
He's not even a cog in the machine anymore.
And that's why it makes it so palpable at the very end of the movie, where they really kind of humanize him with that with that speech. The only other almost human moment that I really had was when he was through the caves and it was with the rats.
Yeah,
and he
kind of
had that reaction. I mean,
this guy's the hero. I was like, oh no, he's afraid of, like, things crawling around him in the dark too, just like we are. So, like, we find out he's human. And the opening moment, the very first time we see him, we don't know that it's his last friend, but we find out that his last friend has died in the very beginning.
Right.
Like, that's what he's come back to. And Troutman even has that line later. He's like, I'm the closest thing he's got to a family, and it's true. Like, Rambo doesn't know how to work in the world, and that's been true of a lot of veterans of those wars, and it speaks a lot to how, like, society's treatment of it. And also just, like, what war does to a person. Like, everybody makes it up, like, oh, it's this noble thing, you know, to defend your country. And, like, and in some respects, yeah, it absolutely is. But at the same time, like what happens to, like, the dregs, like, your John Rambos? Like, they get swept under the rug. Like, Dennehy and the sheriffs, like, all the deputies that are abusing him in the beginning, those are the same guys that are shouting to support the troops and, like, wearing the ribbons on their trucks and shit. But and then to see how they actually treat their veterans, though, it's disgusting.
Oh yeah, and that's a very important statement. It's a very poignant statement, not just in the specific context of how we treat our troops, but also just as an abstract concept of what you say and what you do. You know, if they don't mesh well together, then that makes you a bad person. It legitimately does, and that's why that you didn't root for the cops. That's why you didn't really care for them, because they didn't. Lil Teasel was clearly harassing him early in the movie, but with almost, if he hadn't been an asshole about it, with almost I would almost go with it. I would almost be like, okay, the guy's just trying to keep his town boring.
But he was clearly abrasive. There's only one point where I think Lil Teasel is painted as remotely sympathetic, and I think it's the scene where he goes to the bar with Troutman to apologize for going off about Rambo being dead earlier. And even then, like, he shits on that, like, not a minute after he apologizes and tries to turn it around,
for sure.
So, yeah, it's good. Yeah, it's definitely, like you said, it's different, like, kind of the context and the way that it was established. Like, already from out the gate, we know this character is just a fucker. Like, there's nothing redeeming about him, there's nothing likable about him. Like, what he's saying is doing his job is clearly just him enforcing his perceptions and his views and his beliefs, like, he doesn't give two shits about the City of Hope. Like, he doesn't like that someone like John Rambo is in his town.
That's true. It really does speak to the acting quality of the movie, especially for the time that it was. Like, at least it was 81, 82, something like that.
I'll check. I know it was early 80s.
What I particularly liked about the acting, though, is that every single one of these characters had a deep backstory.
Yeah.
All the main characters, they had a lot going on that had happened before the film, especially John Rambo, that they didn't tell you any of it.
Yeah, you don't.
They didn't take any time out of the movie to explain it. Maybe this is part of me just being tired of the comic book origin story taking up an entire movie of every franchise. But I like that they just used, you know, talented, quality actors who were willing to actually figure out and portray through their portrayal of the character.
Mm-hmm.
Just little snippets of what they've been through.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, those quick, like, cuts with the flashbacks when he's interrogated, like, basically inside of a minute down in the holding area, we know that in addition to being veteran, he's been a POW at some point. Like, he's been held captive and tortured, which I can't possibly... I imagine that's largely to do with his PTSD in the movie, too.
Right.
So, and the fact that the deputies don't realize, like, even after they find out he's a veteran, even after they found out, like, he won the Congressional Medal of Honor, like, they're still shitty to him. So, like, even before, like, I wouldn't justify their treatment of him. I could understand their attitude towards him if they just thought he was, like, a drifter. But even after the facts are laid out and it's made clear, this man's a war hero, he fought and sacrificed for his country, like, he's been bestowed the highest honor you can get for that, and they still treat him like shit.
And the name of the award that he got, the Congressional Medal of Honor, clearly honor was something that meant a lot to him,
yeah,
and to his character. I mean, he went out of his way to not kill people when he didn't have to,
exactly,
on a number of different occasions in the
film. The body count for this movie is 3. The lowest of the entire Rambo franchise.
Right.
It's 2 dogs and the 1 cop who falls out of a helicopter.
Right.
It isn't even killed by direct action. It's Rambo throwing a rock at a helicopter.
It's not even clear that killing somebody was his intention. He's
exactly.
just trying to distract the helicopter pilot.
Precisely. Well, and then he even tries to give himself up. After that, he walks out in the open with his hands up, the white flag, and they open fire on him. After he loudly declares he's willing to turn himself in, he doesn't want anyone else to get hurt over it.
Right.
And the police just fuck up at every conceivable turn.
You know what character I wish I had seen developed more was Mitch. I think I
got
the name right. He's the redheaded guy at the beginning of the film.
Yeah, David Caruso's character.
He's very, very early in the film, he realizes that they're treating this guy wrong.
Yeah,
he speaks his mind about it.
He's the voice of reason, yeah.
And I would have liked to see just more of him, you know, towards the end of the film, especially with the ending that they went with.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's good. He's taken out of action, basically.
That's true.
Because most of the deputies are in that fucking amazing scene.
Mm-hmm.
Look, First Blood is up there for me. Because Most Dangerous Game is one of my favorite books/movies. You familiar with it?
I haven't seen it.
Most Dangerous Game, basically the premise of it is guy shipwrecks on an island and is hunted for sport.
Right.
And you've seen it done in countless other stuff, Battle Royal, Hunger Games. Predator, even.
Family Guy.
Yeah. It's like, it's a very well-known trope slash genre, and it's been done better than some with others. Like I said, like the Predator series. Amazing example. First Blood. Another great running with that trope. Mm-hmm. Movies like Running Man.
Right.
And I love that. So it's one of my favorite tropes and story types, and I think one of the best ways it's ever been done is in First Blood, where like you just see John Rambo popping up out of the shadows, like, and taking out these people like with non-lethal means, and the when he comes after Brian Dennehy, the moment when he puts the knife to his throat and tells him to back off, he's like, "Let it go, or I'll give you a war you wouldn't believe."
Right.
And then just slips off into the darkness. That's such a fucking badass moment.
I love the camera work in that, in that entire scene. Because most of the kills, if you were looking, you could see him way before his victim was able to see him.
Yeah.
You could tell what was going to happen if you were looking for it.
And they're just bringing up, and then he's just like perched on the treetop and
right.
like dives on the guy. Yeah. And again, like, and that's the thing. And he even says too, is like, "I could have killed all of you, but I didn't. Let it go." Like, so he goes out of his way time and time again, and they keep forcing his hand. Like he says in the transmission to Troutman, they drew first blood.
Mm-hmm.
He just wanted to get some fucking coffee and pie, essentially, and they went to war with him because he had long hair, and he hadn't showered in a while.
Right.
One of the other things... I'm blanking on it now, too. Well, what else? What are some of your other thoughts on this? What are some things that kind of stuck out with you?
Just to go back to what you were saying about the flashbacks. The flashbacks were a very, very well done part of the movie. And I was, and this is just part of, I think just the way things date and the way that fashion choices don't really transfer from generation to generation. The mustache completely took me out of those scenes. I wanted to take him seriously. I wanted to, and I knew they were telling an important part of the story, but his mustache just, I couldn't look at anything else.
I remember you laughing during that. I was like, what is wrong with you? This is a very serious moment in young John Rambo's life.
Yeah, I felt bad about that laugh. I did. But it was genuine.
One of the other things I never noticed before, this technically almost counts as a Christmas movie. Because this takes place in December, and there were Christmas lights and decorations.
Huh.
Like, there was the Merry Christmas banner in the police station. So I've got another list to add to Gremlins and Die Hard and Jingle All the Way.
Right.
As far as my favorite Christmas movie. So I thought that was really interesting that I'd never noticed before.
Die Hard 2 doesn't make the list.
Nah, Die Hard 2 does not make the list. Hard 2 is...
Odd number Die Hards are clearly better.
Yes. Well, except for the most recent one. 1 and 3 are really good.
This is a 10-year rule that just recently no longer works.
Yeah. It was doing fine, and then A Good Day to Die Hard just had to fuck it up.
Right.
A Good Day to Die Hard has come up so many times on this podcast. Because
everybody knows how you haven't seen
A Good Day to Die Hard. Exactly. It's like... And I would never make anyone watch it on this podcast, or just in life.
That's good.
Because it's so terrible. But we did the original Die Hard for an episode, and then we did Olympus Has Fallen, which is very Die Hard-esque.
Mm-hmm.
It actually came out the same year, of course, as A Good Day to Die Hard, and was the better Die Hard movie of the two.
Right.
So, the Die Hard franchise comes up a lot. And again, I think it's also because, like First Blood... a lot of people would go to this now, and they would see, they'd be like, "Oh, it's so obvious what's going to happen," but that's because they've seen everything else that came after, and you look at it and you have to realize something like First Blood set the trend for it, just like the first Die Hard movie, so it's responsible for establishing a lot of those tropes, and again, like the common trope of like the cops are in power, and they know everything, and they're just so set in their ways, the highly skilled war hero or whoever that we don't find out until much, much later what he's really capable of.
Mm-hmm.
So things like that. I think it's a tragedy that it took this movie as long as it did to get the credit that it's finally gotten. I was reading some reviews as we were watching it, and people weren't super impressed. Like, it got a couple of decent critical reviews, but like, nobody really acknowledged the impact of it when it came out in 82.
I mean, you're absolutely right. That is a tragedy that people didn't realize at the time, but it's easy to see why. A lot of the bad behavior, a lot of the negative traits of human beings that were being pointed out by this movie were still actively being exercised by a lot of people who just didn't want to come to terms with that fact.
Yeah.
And it is a tragedy. It's exactly the right word for it, but you know, it's not a recipe for selling a whole lot of tickets.
Yeah, no, as the same with like other movies. Like you look at a movie like Apocalypse Now or The Deer Hunter, like movies that deal with Vietnam and like or people trying to reintegrate into a world outside of that after the fact. And I think like at one point John Rambo says he can't even hold a job. And in Vietnam, he was in charge of flying helicopters and tanks, killing machines that cost millions of dollars, and like he can't even be a valet back in America. But that entire monologue is so heartbreaking.
It really is.
And then he gets to the part about his friend being blown up, like by him, and just having pieces of his friend on him, and trying to put him together. The way he does it. It's the way you would imagine a child discovering, like, a dead animal who wasn't familiar with death. Like, if they saw, like, a bird ripped in half, like, they would probably try and put it back together. And that's John Rambo's reaction when his friend blows up, which, like, I'm sure is part hysteria, but at the same time, I think it's a very relatable emotion for all of us. Like, we've obviously not been in that exact scenario, but we've known that kind of fear or that uncertainty to some extent. Obviously not the extent there, but like I said, very relatable.
It also really speaks to just the relationships that he had with the rest of his units. Because death was not something new to him. He wasn't a child discovering death for the first time. At the moment that he was describing in that scene, he had already been the instrument of death who knows how many times.
Yeah.
But this is the first time that it really, you know, connected him on that sort of psychological level.
Yeah, usually he's the one dealing it out, and then to have it turned on him.
That's got to be, you know, all sorts of questions. I mean, you're right. It's relatable, but it's not relatable at all. I can't put myself in that scenario at all and have any actual response of how I would react to it.
Yeah. It's that thing, like a great character like John Rambo. In the other movies, he is. He's this unstoppable killing machine. In this movie, he's very human, even if we only see that in glimpses throughout.
I very much do like the movie where the good guy is the one who clearly outclasses the other guys, right?
Yeah.
The guy that you're rooting for, he's not growing. There's not going to be a montage where he learns to take out 200 cops in the
exactly.
forest. He starts with all the skills, all the badassery that he needs.
Yeah.
And he just demonstrates it through the course of the film. So that's just something I enjoy. It's a very well done film. The knife.
Yeah, okay.
The knife kind of came across a little bit Deus Ex Machina-y, a little bit. It was almost like a MacGyver knife, like he had everything inside. And I know those knives do exist.
Yeah, the survival knife.
It just, I don't know. I didn't care for it.
Okay, I could see that. It makes sense to me that he had it. But additionally, I think if the compass hadn't been there, like, there would have been another way for him to intuit it.
Yeah, it was daytime. You could see the sun.
Exactly. And again, like, on top of that, like, that's just basic survival training 101. And when your whole thing is guerrilla warfare, which he clearly excels in, and it's explicitly told to us by Troutman later that that's what he does, like, that he digs in and defends a position and uses the surroundings to his advantage against his enemies.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, like, you could
have said that about all the things in the knife handle, because the compass, obviously, you could have done from the sun. Mm-hmm. The medicine, I mean, it's a movie scene where he's stitching himself up. I don't have to see him put medicine on it. I'm okay with that either way. It doesn't really matter to me.
Yeah.
The matches. Later in the movie, he has a lighter. He doesn't obtain the lighter at any point. He just goes, assume he always has it, but he's using matches in the cave to light his torch.
Yeah. There could be any number of ways he came across that. Could have been sitting in the ashtray of the truck.
Yeah, he had just carjacked somebody.
Yeah, exactly. And again, when he does confront these people face to face, he's clearly threatening, but we see two moments where he could easily kill somebody. On top of the other countless moments, the first time when he catches the hunter's son, when the militia comes after him, essentially, and he has the knife to him, instead he throws the guy's gun off in the bushes and just takes off. And then when he does steal the truck later, he just holds an eye to him, and then he makes conversation with him too. Like, to, and he tells him, like, keep your eyes on the road. That's how accidents happen.
Right.
So like, he's clearly like trying to talk to him and let him know like he's in control of the situation, but he's not trying to bully or intimidate to an unnecessary extent.
And that served a very important purpose near the end of the film, where he has the M16 and he's going around shooting up the Transformers. At no point in that scene did it feel like a murderous rampage. You knew at that point...
He was methodical.
He had demonstrated so many times that he was methodical. He was doing everything that he had was a very specific plan to get to a specific end that he got to, and you were able to follow that because he had demonstrated it so many times.
And that fucking scene... I forgot how good that sequence is at the very end when he's just running between streets and just fucking with Teasel. and the tension just builds so well. And then the moment when he sees Brian Dennehy pop his head up, like just the look in his eyes. I the first time seeing that, I didn't know if he was going to kill him or not.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, I obviously the part of me that wants Rambo to come out okay is like, no, you know, you got to take the better path, take your first blood, but you don't have to match it. And then part of me's like, he might kill Brian Dennehy.
Mm-hmm.
So, I liked it on a first view. The movie really does. I feel like it keeps you guessing, and you're not sure to what extent his war is going to go. Because he's very clearly turned it into a war.
Oh, yeah. No, I have a thing... that my wife and I joke about all the time is whenever I watch something, I can't turn it off. I try to figure out the ending, and I've gotten to the point that I feel like I'm pretty good at it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm good enough at it that she refuses to watch CSI with me anymore because I always explain what's going to happen before it happens. So I'm CSI level of...
Is there a celebrity guest actor this weekend? It was them. They did it.
Yeah. You see that guy that was in the movie with a speaking role that you have to pay him for but hasn't done anything important yet? Keep your eye on him.
No, it was Stephen Colbert. He's the pedophile in this episode.
Robin Williams is going to do something really weird in a minute.
Yeah.
But no, there was no red flags, no real giveaways about the plot.
Well, good. I'm glad I was able to stump you.
It was. it was pretty intense.
Cool. I think we're about to a point where we can wrap it up. A thing I've started doing lately, at the end of each episode, what was your favorite moment of the whole movie? Like, what was your favorite thing? Or the moment that, like, you knew that you were on board? Whatever stuck out most, what you're going to carry with you from this movie?
It's almost a difficult question, man.
Yeah. There's a lot of great moments in this movie. There were moments I had forgotten because it's been a couple of years since I've watched it myself.
It's something we've actually already talked about, but just the moment where he does, you know, come out of the bushes, puts the knife to Teasel's throat,
and
confronts him face to face. It was the perfect movie scene. It really was.
Yeah.
You can't make a point better than that. There's no possible way to do that.
Yeah. Well, and the literal storm building around them too.
Right.
Like, to that moment, like just a perfect backdrop. Yeah.
No, there's... I'm not going to forget that scene anytime soon, for
good.
Sure.
Good. That's a great scene. Yeah, and I'd say for me, it's a toss-up between that and the monologue at the very end of the movie to Troutman. Like, both of those just capture not only Rambo's character, but everything that the movie is about.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like, there's scenes that could, like, if the wrong actor had been cast or if the dialogue had been changed in the right way, it could have been just awful and hokey and tacky.
Right.
But everything in this movie just, like, it came together, the right people were in it, like, the script was really good.
It congealed like a recipe where you got all the right ingredients and all
exactly.
the right proportions,
and just
whether
knocks it out of the
park. By accident, it just absolutely hit.
And then they decided to take Rambo to Singapore, or wherever the hell he goes in Rambo 2, to just kill a bunch of people. Although Rambo, I actually do a joke where I reference this from Rambo 2. There are some amazing lines in some of the later Rambos. In Rambo 2, as he's getting ready to go to war again, like in the jungle, like getting ready to go after the people who killed his friends, he just looks at the person with him and he says, "Sometimes to survive a war, you gotta become war." and that is as different as those movies are. That's very much what Rambo
is. Yeah, that's
very
Rambo-like.
Like, he's the embodiment of that. Like, just war, like, it's come back. found that it doesn't have a place in the world. So just like Martin Sheen in Apocalypse Now, like he knows he doesn't belong in the real world. He belongs out in the battlefield killing.
Well, that's
because that's what he knows.
That's a powerful way to make that statement, though.
He
doesn't belong in the world because he is war.
Yeah,
that's. There's a lot going on in that sentence.
Yeah, there's no place here for you with our Walgreens and our Buick Centuries. You need to go back out, and you just need to slit throats from jumping out of bushes and shit, and sticking people with little
Punji spike traps.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for doing the show.
Anytime.
I had a blast.
Had a lot of fun.
Hey, I'm good. We'll definitely get you back on soon.
Yay.
Thank you guys for listening, and we'll catch you later.
See ya.